Ja, gute Woche. Last time we ended with the question that was raised, and we started addressing it about how Hashem, yes, he puts the Jewish people through things for his greater purposes, or I should say for his greater purposes, slash, which are for our greater purposes. We've been discussing how the ordeals of Klal Yisrael are put through are meant to bring us to the place that he wants us to be, to bring us closer to him, etc. And then we also talked about how you put in that into the fact it's very nice for the people who are still alive, but what about the people who aren't? And we'll see if we'll elaborate more on this, but the bottom line answer, which is an answer that it's trite, we already all know it, and yet basically everything in life is about enhancing our appreciation of this fact, is that our life here in this world and our bodies is a very, very small part of the picture. And okay, we'll see if we'll get back to that. But the question that we ended with last week that we started addressing was, but is it possible that yes, Hashem has his greater plan, but small people get trampled in the process? I think that was the nusach of the question that we answered with, that we ended with next, last week. Yes. The Jewish people as a whole are being moved in a certain direction, but there's collateral damage. This one gets killed, that one gets killed, those 1,000 get killed, those 10,000 get killed, 6 million, etc. How does that work? And we started addressing it last week, and now I want to address it more head on. And first of all, the answer is that no, there is no such thing as, I think that's the term, collateral damage. Is that the
Yeah,
term? Or just
collateral.
you have like a collective damage that happens? There is no such thing, and I want to bring this out. I'll start with two quotes. They say B'shem Stalin, and this is, as they say in Hebrew, Noe ha'dvarim lo'omrim, meaning it was appropriately said by the right person, or inappropriately said by the wrong person. Stalin said that when 10 people are killed, it's a tragedy. When 10,000 people are killed, it's a statistic. Okay. Now he was the man to say that. He knew about that. I'll put it from another angle. I once had a history teacher who said the following. I was about 13, 14 years old at the time, a little vulnerable at that point. He said like this. He said, "You guys don't appreciate how insignificant you are." Okay. Why? He said, think about it. How many names do you know from the 1600s? 10? How many names do you know from the 1600s? There were millions of people. Where are they all? They're tiny, insignificant slivers of history. And that's what you guys are. Okay? In 500 years from now, you'll basically be where all the Tom, Dicks, and Harrys of the 1600s were. A very depressing statement. I remember as a 13, 14-year-old kid, it was like, that's pretty depressing.
At a Jewish school?
In a Jewish school.
Oh.
Yes, I'm just as surprised as you are.
Right.
It shouldn't have been said in a Jewish school. And Baruch Hashem, really at that time, I already should have had the spiritual infrastructure to be able to deal with it, but it had its effect. So now let's take a step back and begin elaborating what we started discussing last week. The understanding that no, there is no such thing. And that is based on the understanding that, first of all, let's approach it from our angle. We are material people. It's hard for us to see the immensity of the big picture. And therefore, when we see numbers, right? But the understanding that each individual neshama, there's no such thing as wholesale neshamas. Neshamas is not something wholesale. Each individual neshama is something extremely unique that Hashem never had such a neshama. Now, don't start asking me about Gilgulim, but I'm just saying we're not going to deal with that now. But it's not a conflict, okay? Never had such a neshama from the beginning of time until now. Each Jewish neshama is a plan, is a vision that Hashem has in and of itself because he cherishes and wants his relationship with that individual neshama. And not only that, We come back to the Mishnah Sanhedrin that tells us, Chayev kol adam loyma bishvili nivra olam. Every individual is obligated to say, meaning to understand, the universe was created for me. Now, what exactly does that mean? What exactly is it? You share the universe with billions of people, especially it's not just the people who live today, but the people who you share the same universe with all of them. But the understanding that, yes, Hashem, for his reasons, merges it all together. But if you have a Jewish neshama, the understanding is that Hashem is saying, in essence, Jewish neshamas are not the production of circumstance. You know, my father married my mother, and I'm the unfortunate result. That's not how Jewish neshamas work. Every neshama is something that Hashem was planning from the beginning of time, and was envisioning at the beginning of time. And he was busy manipulating your appearance on the scene from the beginning of time. Now, again, this gets overwhelming because 1 minute, I'm one of millions of Jews. It's all interwoven. Leave that to Hashem. We call him Gdol HaEtz of Rav HaLilia. He handles very complex plans. But each one on its own would have justified the whole system. That's Betzim what Chazal are telling us in this Mishnah. And I'll bring this home from another couple of angles, but this is something, a very, very fundamental piece of Yiddishkeit to understand. We say about the stars. No, set aside the stars. We say about us. When Hashem, in a number of occasions, has the Jewish people counted, says, Moinim sorry. I keep going back to the stars. Hashem says, "B'mispar shemois." Through, I want a count of names. Just give me a minute. See this? How many do I have in my hand? How many do I have in my hand? Okay. I'll just put people on it. Three what?
Items.
Okay, you don't know what I was talking about. We were talking about phones. It's a little hard to just say how many do I have in my hand. You have to know. In this sense, okay, number and name is a little bit of a contradiction in term because a name is individuality. Okay, it would make more sense if I pick up five pens and ask how many do I have in my hand. The answer is five, right? But if I pick up three things that are unrelated to each other, so it's not a group, right? Unless I tell you items, right? But I say things, okay? But there is nothing in common. Okay, I pay bills with my phone using my fine, but there isn't anything in common that brings them together into a group of three, right? So, mispar shem, shame implies. Now I'm not getting into the technical name that your parents gave you, but each of us has their own shame in Hashem's plan, their own individual place, and number implies one mass group of something in common. Meaning, if you do want to say that I have three in my hand, you have to say we're talking about three things, right? Meaning, there's a commonality. By saying the mispar shemois, which is the way the Torah says ubiquitously, again and again, when it talks about counting the Jewish people, it's something of a contradiction in terms because a number implies there aren't individual names. It's just people, right? It's people. It's not names, it's people. 10,000 people, 600,000 people, right? Names implies that there isn't really anything binding the group. Each one is standing on its own. But this is exactly the point. This is exactly what Hashem is conveying here. And that's the reason he keeps counting them. Hashem, the reason he so much cherishes the Bnei Yisrael and wants to have that count again and again is because each one is its own treasure for Hashem. Hashem values us not as, oh, I have 600,000 of them. No, I have one individual that means the world to me, that means the universe to me, literally, meaning I would have created the whole system just for my relationship with that one person. And I have another one. And I have another one. And it happens to come together to 600,000. And this is also what we say about the Haggadah. When Hashem did the whole process of the 10 Makkos and Kriyas Yamsuf and taking the Bnei Yisrael out, Hashem, Sfarim tell us that Hashem was picturing, and this is hard to fathom. We have to remember that we're dealing with Hashem, who's not limited by our capacity. Who was Hashem envisioning when he did dance for a day in order to show himself to the Jewish people, he wasn't picturing a mass of 600,000 people gathered around his synagogue. He was aimed at each individual, not just from them, right? That's what we say in the Haggadah. Right? Each person in the future was being targeted. I want to show you, Dam, Tzfardeya, so that you should understand what you mean to me and what I would do for you. Kinim Oroiv, for you specifically, you who is going to live in another 4,000 years from now. And the whole process of Kriyas Yamsuf. That's why Hashem comes at Har Sinai. What's the Loshon at Har Sinai? He doesn't say, Anochi Hashem Elokeicha. He's talking to a mass against 2 million people, 600,000 plus, 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 plus. He doesn't say, Anochi Hashem Elokeicha. And then he says later when he's giving specific mitzvahs, when he's introducing himself to the Bnei Yisrael, what does he say? The singular, Anochi Hashem Elokeicha. Why? Because at Har Sinai, standing there, when Hashem is making his essential introduction, and laying down the aside of it all, he says, I am your personal Hashem. I am your personal advocate. This is a personal one-on-one business. And this is what Hashem was saying to each individual, not just those who were there in body, but we were all there. We were all there. And this is what Hashem is saying to each of us until the end of history. And therefore, we understand, we should understand, that there is no such thing as small change. There's no such thing as collateral damage. Each individual justifies an entire universe. Each individual is something that Hashem holds very dear and cherishes more than he cherishes the rest of the universe outside of the other Jewish neshama, the other one. But I mean the whole system, the whole galaxy. If so, how could it be that when Hashem is trying to move the Jewish people somewhere, 10,000 people die? So here we come back to our point. And that is again the understanding that, and this is the only way to work with it. It's the only way to work with Yiddishkeit Bethlehem. The understanding that death is not an end all, but that death is a stage in the process. And in order for us to really appreciate that, it comes back to hammering home what we should be hammering home anyways. The Maseilas Yesharim tells us that the focus of the whole system called Avodas Hashem, called life, is to be focusing on where Hashem is trying to get us to. What's that? That is Olam Haba. Our life is neshamas. Again, we're going through this brief period in the body, which to us feels like a long time. But that's because, you know, coming into Olam Hazeh, being plunked into this body kind of like just gives this like slow, this stay on everything. It's not a long time. I'm in my mid-40s. I already see how I've already been seeing for quite a number of years how each year goes faster than the year before it. Okay? It's not such a long time. And it's not a depressing thought. It's a spurring thought. It's the understanding that Hashem says, I have life intended for you. Here's the beginning stage. It can involve all kinds of different things. It can involve this life circumstance, that life circumstance. It can involve, but the goal of it all is to be ready for that great moment of transition when you call it the pregnancy is over and life actually begins.
So, is there any concept of collective punishment, like the Jewish people as a whole are being punished?
Yes, there is.
You as individually might not have heard it.
Yes.
Are you caught up in the whole
How
process?
does that work? And the answer is that yes, but that has to be properly understood. And here it comes back to the point that we're making, but I hope we'll elaborate on it as we go along. Yes, in terms of Olam Hazeh. Again, let's remember that. That's the key word here. In Olam Hazeh, there is such a thing. In Olam Haba, it's already each person with his whole picture, including death as part of the performance. Part of the performance that brings us into our next stage of existence. Now, here I want to read to you. This we mentioned last week about Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman, who was one of the 6 million, which 6 million would seem to be the epitome of just like wholesale, right? Chalila, Chas v'Shalom. But here I want to read to you the description of his last moments. It really starts a bit before this, but I'm just going to read what they bring. This is his sefer, Kotet Shirim, which they printed after his death. And in the beginning, in the Hakdama, the introduction, they bring this little piece, which was recorded by a person who was there and survived. Bachana was hiding out in a in Kovna, in one of these hideouts, one of these houses with a whole bunch of other Jews. Now I'm not reading yet, I'm just giving the background. Rebbetzin Volbo also was actually there in that apartment at the time when he was dragged out. Rebbetzin Volbo, Reb Shlomo Volbo's wife, she was nifter, I don't know, the last 5 years or so. She also has her own account of what happened. She actually wasn't taken from the apartment. So we only have that part of when he was actually taken out of the apartment. She describes that he was in the middle of sitting and learning with his chavrusa. That's not here. What's here is afterwards when they actually got to the. So she described that he was in the middle of sitting and learning with his chavrusa in this apartment that was full of Yidden hiding. And the Lithuanian police burst in. They were the collaborators. And they whatever, they knocked him over, whatever it was, and they came, storming in, and all the people there. They said, like, he was thrown for a moment, but then when he caught what was happening, he said a certain composure came over to him. He kind of like took command of the whole situation, and everybody around just kind of like grouped around him. And it was almost like he was leading everybody out. It was to such an extent that one, the two people that took hold of his arms, one of them got intimidated and said, let's let this one go. But the other one said no. So they are described as follows. And I'm just reading a translation. I'm reading out from here. This is on Yud Aleph Tammuz of 1941. Okay. As they're actually there, it says as follows. Reb Elchanan, he was speaking to the whole group. Reb Elchanan spoke quietly with his usual inner calm. Nothing about his voice changed. His face was serious, but not anything out of the usual. As he spoke, there was no personal tone at all, and he didn't even try to part from his son, Reb Naftali, who was there with them. His words were directed to everybody who was there and to all of Klal Yisrael. And he said as follows, apparently, in Shemayim, they consider us tzaddikim, because we were chosen to atone with our bodies for Klal Yisrael. And therefore, he says, we now have to focus on tshuva shlema. Right now, we don't have a lot of time. We're on our way to the ninth fort, where they had already murdered the masses of Slabodka and Kovno. We're going to be there soon. And we have to realize that we are constituting and presenting karbanos that will be that much more powerful and that much more desirable to Hashem through tshuva. And therefore, we'll be able to save that many more lives of our, interesting, he says, of our brothers and sisters in America. I'll just insert here in parentheses that he actually was in America when the reports started coming back. And he chose to go back because he didn't want to leave his Talmidim without him. There's a famous picture of him on the boat as they're coming back to Nazi-occupied Europe. And then he continues and says, now, Chas v'Shalom, we don't want a wrong thought to come into any of our minds, because we know there's a din pigul. Pigul means that if the kohen has the wrong thoughts as he is sacrificing the korban, he can invalidate the korban. He said, we are now fulfilling the greatest mitzvah of Ba'esh Yitzato Ba'esh Atosi Livnoisa. Hashem, you destroyed with fire, and it's with fire that you're going to rebuild it. And then he goes on and says, and the fire that is now going to be burning our bodies is the very fire that is going to reinstate Beis Yisrael. That was how he guided the group that was with him toward their Nisal Kiddush Hashem. Do I want from this? What I want from this is this understanding again, that we know that we've always viewed it this way, that people who give up their lives al Kiddush Hashem are not people who fell by the wayside in the course of Klal Yisrael's history, but these people are put on the highest place in Klal Yisrael's history. Coming back to the point that we'll keep saying it again and again, and it's easy to say, like I keep saying, that's why we'll say it. Let's say it when it's easy and really hammer it home, that death is a stage in the process. It makes no difference whether it's death at this point, at that point. It's always a part of a person's process toward where Hashem really wants to get him. And therefore, again, easy to say. So let's say it again and again until it actually starts making its way into us. Not to be scared of it. Not to be scared of it. It's like the Chovas HaLevavos says, we would like to delay it, not because at the end of the day we're scared. On the contrary, if we really appreciate the point, the Chovas HaLevavos says, it's almost as though we're anticipating it. And there were people who did. I don't know if I'm at Madrid. I'm giving it over. Again, I'm saying the words, and I'm trying to listen to those words along with everybody else here. But the Chovas HaLevavos says, it's almost as though the person is anticipating it, knowing what's coming afterwards. And yet, he would like to delay it. Why? Because every added day that I can get in, I can pack in that much more and set myself up better for what's coming then. So we can go on and on about this, and it still wouldn't do the subject justice. But we are coming back and saying, and this is really something you should be working on all the time, to be living as a ben olam haba, as a person who feels that their place is really olam haba, and I'm here to do a job. I'm here for a technical reason to do a job. And as soon as Hashem says, okay, you did your job, I'm ready to embrace that. I'm ready to move through that too. And I'll bring this home from another angle. I'll bring this home from another angle. Hadar HaMidbar. We've spoken about the Dar HaMidbar quite a number of times. The understanding that the whole reality of the Dar HaMidbar is something significantly different than the superficial impression that we get of a bunch of troublemakers who just couldn't get it right. There's a machlokes in the Gemara. I feel like I've said this recently, but you know what? This won't be the first time I'm guilty of repetition. And I bleen nether guarantee that it won't be the last time either. There's a machlokes in the Gemara. About there's a shita that says that the Dor HaMidbar have no share, no chelek l'olam haba. And there's a shita that says that they do. And the Gemara follows up on that very, very strongly and sharply, and almost like criticizing the one who said that they don't. And apologize. And it ends off by saying, they were a very pious generation. Now, again, I'm not going to go, we've spoken about this all the time, I'm not going to go through all the ins and outs now. And about them, it says, this is really what I want to get to. About them, it says, Isfuli chasidai korse brise alei zevach. Gather around me my dedicated ones, my devotees. That's how the word chasid translates. My devotees. Korsim brise alei zevach, who established a covenant with me. Covenant is a very vague word. What does it mean exactly? It's something religious. We don't know exactly what it is. But the covenant, for our purposes, we'll call it a relationship. Okay, that's what it means. Who established a relationship with me over a zevach, over a sacrifice. What is this pasuk saying? It's saying something very, very profound. The Dor HaMidbar, and again, just to make a long story short right now, all of the complaints, all of the accusations that Hashem has against them were not frustration. It was chinuch. It was Hashem taking a nation and saying, I'm going to take this nation and raise them to levels that defy what we would think is realistic for humans. And the 40 years in the Midbar were a very rigorous training program, which at the end of the day, how did Hashem feel about the experiment at the end of the day? Everybody knows he was frustrated, right? It's not what he said. We have the Nevuah of Bilam. Where Hashem, in the most effusive, flowery terms, expresses his pride in his people at the end of the 40 years. That's right. There were reasons for that. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't either. That's right. Neither did Aaron. There are reasons for that. We're not going to get into that now, but it's a worthwhile discussion. But these were the people who were establishing, these were the, what we call the Dor HaMeyasdim, the foundations of what the Jewish people would always be. These were the people who were establishing the standards of the Jewish people. And therefore, Hashem basically took them out of Mitzrayim and said, Here, you're here now? I'm going to get you here. How could that possibly be? It's beyond human ability. We've seen a few places that the B'nai Israel express that. Your expectations of us are beyond human ability. And Hashem says, that's because you don't appreciate what a human is. I know what a human being can be. It's a lot more than any of you can conceive. Well, you're going to apply yourself to my program, and you're going to find that you are beyond what a human being can imagine. And here, he went about this with tough, old-fashioned chinuch. Tough, old-fashioned chinuch meant a lot of beatings. In those days, they could handle it. They were made of different material. And this is how Hashem raised them to the amazing standards that he was seeking. And that at the end of the day, at the end of the 40 years, more accurately, his feedback was given through Bilaam. And that's why I have to ask yourself, why did the nevuos of Bilaam so starkly conflict with everything Moshe Rabbeinu was saying the whole time? What's Moshe Rabbeinu saying all throughout the 40 years? You're a rebellious bunch, you're stiff-necked. You know what? Stiff-necked made it hard to make impressions on them. But you know what the Kuzari says, the other side of the coin? You take a nation that's pliable, you're going to make your impression upon them. Come back 100 years later, they're a different nation. Stiff-necked nation is very, very hard to etch things into. Once you etch them in, they're there to stay. Right? You can make an inscription in butter. Very easy, no problem. Right? Come back in a half an hour, nothing's left. You make an inscription in stone. Very, very, very difficult process. Come back in 100 years, still there, as clear as it was. That's the story of the Jewish people. We were stiff-necked when it came to the Muslims and the Christians and all the other nations who tried. We're still stuck, so to speak, in that same place that Hashem put us since then. So Hashem was very proud of his people. And that was the difference. Bilaam, Moshe is castigating and accusing and blaming. And Bilaam is talking in the most effusive terms. Why? Because Moshe was the mechanech. Moshe wasn't giving feedback. Moshe was being mechanech. He was pushing them to higher heights in an unrelenting process, higher and higher and higher, without giving them a break to breathe. And if they slipped a tiny drop, boom, they get slammed over the head. Because Hashem was creating a nation that floats way above the rest of mankind. Amzu Yotzarti, it says, Yisrael Asher B'chol Espar, Yisrael who I take such pride in. So here we have to ask the same question that we asked at the beginning. Very nice to talk about chinuch, but they died, right? Is that a good mechanech? I'm going to raise you to high levels. I'll kill you if you. What's the answer? This epitomizes what we've been discussing, and this is what Hashem expresses in that pasuk. They did die in the process. They died. They died for the purpose of raising Klal Yisrael to the place where Hashem wanted them. It was very harsh treatment that they got in the Midbar. And really, we should elaborate more because it wasn't just harsh treatment. This was the period of the greatest closeness that we had in Hashem in our history. You have to remember that within all the punishments was a reality of man, of Ananea, Kavod, et cetera, with the Jewish people being spoon-fed by Hashem. Again, it's a worthwhile length, but not for now. But they died in the process of Hashem refining and refining and elevating his people to what to the standard he wanted when he brings them into Eretz Yisrael. And therefore Hashem comes and says, let's go back to that pasuk now. And it takes on such a beautiful light. These were the sacrifices upon which I established my people. They were the sacrifices who were slaughtered on the altar of establishing the eternal B'nai Yisrael. And therefore, bring them close to me. They're my closest circle. Right? That's the pasuk. Gather unto me my devotees, right? Those who established a relationship over a karban, meaning they were the karban, and they were the people who established Hashem's relationship henceforth with the B'nai Yisrael. So it takes on a whole different meaning. Yes, when you just look at it with the physical eye in the material sense, someone complains, 10,000 people dead. An epidemic, 24,000 people, that's the epitome of collateral damage. What does Hashem say afterwards? All those people, you want to know where they are now? Bring them up all the way up close to me. These are my closest people. These are the people who were my partners in creating that treasure of mine that I call the Am Yisrael. And this is the understanding with everything we've been discussing. It's to, just one moment, we'll get to the questions. It's to be able to. Not easy, but to be able to see beyond what we see in the material sense is such a limited, small part of the picture. There is no such thing as a statistic. There's no such thing as 10,000 people being a statistic. There is no Jewish neshama that's a tiny insignificant sliver of history. Everyone is a whole story in itself, something that Hashem is a very, very cherishes in a way that's indispensable to him. The picture is incomplete without any one of them. And whether this person plays out their role through living to a ripe age of 128, or is Chalila taken as a baby, it's all heading to the same place, where that individual neshama has its own individual relationship with Hashem and its own is getting to its own place with Hashem. So this is the beginning of addressing the question. To go all the way, we can't. It's an infinite subject, but a couple of questions were being raised.
Children, though, you know, the neshama says children, it's hard to reconcile with children. That is, I don't know.
It's hard to reconcile it with the neshamas of children. Do you mind if I rephrase the question? And I'm doing it in a little bit of a. With the bodies of children, it's hard to reconcile it. Isn't that the question? With the neshamas of children? On the contrary, maybe it's that much more beautiful. Again, this is easier said than done. And it is. Nevertheless, let's say the words. Have a chance to what?
Did you say
How do we know that? Maybe they used it in the best way possible. This is exactly all coming back to the point. Once we're talking the neshama, once we're talking the neshama, then we have no idea what was a month of existence on this world, what was its significance? We have no idea. It's beyond us. So that's why I'm coming back and stressing. Yes, when you look at it in the material sense, it's just too difficult to swallow. And you know what? I'm gonna reveal something here. I'm also a material person. And when I have to swallow these things, I have the same difficulty. And that's why it's a good idea for me to have a shiur every Sunday, where I have to think through these things and then give them over in the hope that I'll be hammering them in here too. You know what Rabbi Saul Salanter said, right? He said that if I go to Paris to try to be mechazik people, travels from wherever he lives, or somewhere in Russia. And after my whole trip, I was only mechazik one person, and that one person was me. It was worth the trip. Okay. But yes, these are tough things to swallow. Let's hear them anyways. Let's stick them in our throats and cough over them a little bit. But yeah, I'm not denying that.
The premise of all of this is that there is an Olam Haba, and this is just a tiny, what we see here is a tiny, tiny piece of the overall picture. Where are the books about Olam? Where, I mean, we could talk about it, but there's, how do we know about it?
How do we know about it?
Like,
Okay, this is
no one
also a
comes
classic
back to
question.
tell you about it. So,
This is another classic question, right? Why don't we have more elaboration of what it is? There are the more simple answers that kind of like do the job on paper. I'd rather leave the question hanging. And let's see, perhaps next week, if I get an email reminder, we'll try to spend some time on it.
are there books about it? Does anybody write about it?
There are allusions. The pasuk says, "Ayin le'ra'aser le'kimzu As far as we're from our vantage point here, no one knows except you, Hashem, what you are saving, what you have in store, what you have in store.
That would
Now,
go from generation to generation. That's what the whole sequel is, right?
the knowledge of it, that's right, that's right. But the truth is that it really is something that deserves more length because as foreign as it is to us in our state now, there are ways of, although no, nobody can come back and describe, and the Chazal tells us, how can you describe it? Because can you even describe, forget Olam Haba, you are really a neshama. Can I describe to you the experience of existence of a neshama, even though I'm a neshama and you're a neshama? This is really what we have to appreciate. that we don't even know, we can't describe the experiences of Olam Haba as long as we can't describe who we are. We are something that's so way above that. But these are all things that, while on the one hand we say it's true, we can't describe them, on the other hand, there are ways of bringing it more home. And again, Bli Nether, if I get that reminder, maybe we'll spend some more time on this next week, because this is really what it's worth, an awful lot of time and energy to be trying to bring these things home as much as we possibly can.
So I just wanted to say that part of me really senses that what you're saying is true. Like the truth of what you're saying seems to come to me. But another part of me is still agrees with, I almost feel like divided.
That's right. We are divided. I'm also divided. Why? Because again, all we experience is our body. And therefore, that's right. There's no way it would be otherwise. There's definitely, our body is going to be saying, this doesn't work for me. And that's right. We are putting in a lot of effort and energy here to try to expose ourselves to what's beyond that. And true, it's a struggle. If you tell me, I don't know about the rest of you, but I happen to be flesh and blood, and therefore it's not so easy for this to sit with me. I think we're all going to have to confess that we're in the same boat. Even me, who's sitting up here and saying it passionately. Yeah. You're going to say something.
Two things. One is, I just heard that Rav Miller wrote a book on Olam Haba. Is the Rabbi familiar with that?
Yeah, Litzari, I don't manage to keep up with all the material, Baruch Hashem. They've put out so many of his things. So there are a lot of historians, though. I think of myself as a primary Talmud, but I haven't had a chance to open it all yet. I do know that it's out there, and I do know that many have benefited from it, but I'm a little embarrassed to say I don't think I've ever opened it. Okay.
The other thing is, how do we see, it's just a, back to the more stuff, but how do we see that the Dor HaMidbar was rising? Because each example seems like they just spell that, it's just another,
We have to appreciate the examples. We have to study the examples one by one. And that's also a worthwhile business. Are we lining up the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks? That's also a worthwhile business. I would guess, let's see. Exactly, right? We see Hashem expressing that when he says, Zochati, he describes the Midbar. What does he say? I remember Kiviyochol, the days of our honeymoon, right? The Midbar was a time of intense closeness. And yeah, it also deserves elaboration. Bli Nedar, I'm gonna try to keep track of these different things. These are things that should be addressed at length. I see there's one question here. Okay, I see. I already addressed this question. A reminder to talk about the story of Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman. Okay, a good tavach. A good tavach. To you.
Gracias.